Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
How newsy is this that Emmanuel Hall, the wide receiver, is no more?
Yeah, Dan, it's weird because I think in a vacuum of what we've seen in camp, it's not surprising. Like, I can't even think of a time I said, oh, Emmanuel Hall just caught a pass in practice. He barely practiced in camp, and when he did, he wasn't really noticeable because he was coming off this injury. But then if you look big picture and you think about all those draft analysts who pegged him as a mid-round pick who just fell because of the injury worries, and he had some dominating performances at Missouri. He had a great combine playing through an injured groin at the combine. When you look at it that way, you're thinking, wow, that's surprising. The timing is weird, too, to waive him right before practice, no corresponding move. We'll hear from Matt Nagy in about an hour. I'm not sure how much more light he'll shed. My best guess for Emmanuel Hall, if you asked me yesterday, I would have said, yeah, he's going to be on IR this year. Like, I never thought he was actually going to play for this team as a rookie, but I certainly didn't expect him to get waived this early in the process.
Where does the rest of the depth stand at wide receiver then after watching that first preseason game and knowing Hall's not going to be a part of it?
Yeah, well, I had already thought that Javon Wims had secured a spot on this roster, and he's been doing a little more special teams than he did as a rookie, which helps. The guy, if you want to go down the roster, the guy to kind of keep an eye on if there's a spot for him is Marvin Hall, who is not related to Emmanuel Hall, but he's somebody that brings a lot of speed and can help on special teams, can be kind of a backup in the return game if they need it. If they want to keep an extra receiver, he would now definitely be the guy. There was a time probably back in May before we heard about Emmanuel Hall's sports hernia injury that we figured to be between the two Halls and Wims for one or two spots. Now, I think that fifth spot is definitely going to be, sixth spot is definitely going to be Javon Wims. And if they keep seven, then you're talking about Marvin Hall. There's nobody else really kind of in the conversation.
You mentioned sports hernia immediately. I have to ask, is Trey Burton okay? What do we know? What do we not know?
Yeah, I think Trey Burton's, I would say, arrow up. I am foreboding from discussing what I've seen at the first hour and a half of practice out here. But I think based on what I've seen, I think things are looking better for Trey Burton. And I'm not expecting him to play at all in the preseason. That goes for a bunch of starters, but for them, it's all about week one. You know, he said to us last week that he's not looking forward to the fact that this might be a type of injury that's going to require periodic rest days. Mm. So the real question is going to be, how many reps can you give him on September 5th? And then what's going that recovery going to be like? You know, luckily they have those extra days after that Packers game to get ready for week two. It's going to be something they're going to have to monitor, it seems like, for most of the season. But it seems like he's on the right track.
So instead, I'd have to ask you something like, have you seen a 6'3", 235-pound man looking somewhat like Trey Burton doing football-type things? Like, we'd have to do that to get around the foreboding part of Bears practice?
Yeah, I think I'm allowed to say he's out here practicing.
Okay.
So in terms of the level of participation, I actually wouldn't even necessarily know that. But I think I am allowed to tell you guys that Trey Burton is practicing today at Hallis Hall.
If you're not allowed, we'll just say you didn't tell us that.
Yeah. Or I'll say that you guys held it against my will and I had no choice.
That's how we get our interviews here on the show. Mitch Trubisky just handed off a whole ton in that first preseason game. Anything you saw from A1 on the depth chart, and I'll include David Montgomery in there because, let's be honest, that really stood out to you?
Not entirely. I mean, David Montgomery was the guy. And before the preseason game, I was thinking that of all the players – of all the noteworthy guys who could theoretically get reps in the first preseason game, he was the one I was most looking forward to watching because I knew he was going to get a series or two, and it was going to be our first opportunity to see him in live action, and obviously he did not disappoint in his opportunities. Javon Wims had a couple nice plays early on. When you're looking ahead, the only other player in terms of the offensive side of the ball that I want to see in the preseason is Riley Ridley. They kept him out because of he's coming back from that hamstring injury, but I would expect him to be ready to play in New York. I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do because he was someone that really stood out in the spring when Anthony Miller wasn't practicing, and he was running with the first team at that zebra position as a fourth-round pick. So we barely saw Riley Ridley in camp because of that hamstring injury. So in terms of guys looking forward, he's kind of most noteworthy because, yeah, I don't expect really to see much from the starting offense again moving forward. Mike Davis had a nice 12-yard run, mm-hmm. so there was that. But I don't know if we'll see a whole lot more from Mike Davis moving forward either.
One thing I noticed was after the initial excitement over David Montgomery, and why shouldn't we be excited about it? Hell, it was exciting, and he played well, and he did some things. Nagy kind of pushed back. Nagy's like, you guys are going crazy over that run. I mean, it was a decent run, but he really it sounded like he wanted to tap the brakes a little bit on that nice little jump cut touchdown.
Yeah, he did, Dan, and I think that's part of a theme I've noticed from Nagy the last two times we talked to him. Is I wonder if he wants to almost dial down some of the excitement about what this team could potentially do. I think he's as a head coach kind of trying to manage that. Be confident, have swagger, but understand that you're not going to surprise anybody this year. So maybe that the way he talked about Montgomery is part of an overall theme of making sure these guys know that they have this team hasn't won a playoff game together. So there's still a lot that you have to do accomplish. And I think you guys probably saw the reports from Sunday's practice that the coaches were pretty chappy with the players. I mean, there was a lot of what you would expect from a coach on a football field late in training camp. If guys are kind of, I think he said that they were kind of mentally exhausted a little bit at that point. So there was some chirping going on, and I think that you should be pleased to see that because you don't want any complacency. The one thing I'll say about Montgomery, too, which is interesting that Nagy went that way, is he is probably, Dave Montgomery, the last player on this team I would ever think would get too big of a head. The personnel guys told the story of talking to Montgomery in his pre-draft visit, and he was just, they asked players every time they come to Hallis, where do you think you're going to get drafted? And when they asked Montgomery, his response was, I just hope I get drafted. And it wasn't like a guy, the way they described it to us, it wasn't a guy feigning humility. Like, that's just actually the type of guy he is. So, that's why I think when Nagy said that, I don't think he's worried about the rookie getting too excited with what he can do. I think it was more of an overall team philosophy that just wanted to kind of dial back a little bit about the way that people are talking about everything.
And did I hear correctly yesterday, as I'm following, you and so many of the beat reporters on Twitter, that Nagy mentioned something about now they've installed so much, and after all the talk about getting up from the 100 level to the 200 level, he thinks now maybe it's time to simplify the offense so they can just work faster. What did that mean?
Yes, the pullback that took over Twitter sphere yesterday. The way that I read that and the way that he kind of explains it a little bit is it's more like they've tried all of these plays out over the last few weeks, and now he wants to kind of simplify things in terms of, okay, we know these are plays we're not going to use. We tried them out in training camp. We didn't like it. It didn't work. So let's kind of focus more on the plays we know we're going to use, the plays we know we like. That was the way I read that, as just a kind of a more of a standard operating procedure that we've tried out 100 plays and we want to throw 30 of them out. So now let's pull back and just focus on these 70 over the next few weeks as we get ready for the Packers.
So obviously the flip side of that coin is the conspiracy theory that, or at least it feels like a conspiracy theory now to mention it out loud, is that they're not pleased with Mitchell Trubisky's progress in the offense, right? I mean, what sort of klaxons would be going off? What would be happening if you started to sniff some of that stuff? It would have to be the most closely kept secret in that entire organization up until the opener against Green Bay, yes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nobody would ever let a hint that they're, disappointed with the way he's played. I mean, you guys, I hesitate to call them excuses because the problem is, like, I don't know the play call. I don't know what Trubisky's reads are every time. I'm not sure the way the defense is playing. I'm not sure what Nagy's asking him to do. But we hear a lot of, well, I wanted him, you know, he said it at Family Fest. He said, I wanted him to take more shots than usual. Like, I wanted him to test these things. You know, we got a story out the Athletic today by Adam Johns, who talked to some of the guys who played for Andy Reid and the Chiefs, and similar to some of the stuff that Andy would ask his quarterbacks to do at training camp, try this stuff out. So because of the way that they discuss some of these mistakes that we see, you know, we're not going to necessarily hear, that's what we're going to hear when we ask about these plays. Now, I asked Nagy after Family Fest about Mitch's mechanics, because that's something that, you know, is not impacted by a read or something that you is, you know, based on your pre-snap situation. So that's something that you want to see improvement from. And he said that he's seen improvement in anticipation and timing, and then kind of caught himself and admitted that's not really mechanics. But that's something that, for me, like, with my, you know, my layman kind of view of it, or at least slightly above layman, it's hard for me to tell necessarily the Mitch's mechanics are different than last year. I got to watch that in the game to get a better sense of it. That's where I really would love to know where the coaches stand. Are the mechanics better than what they saw last year? You know, because we know about the growth and the intangibles and the leadership, and he knows the offense better, and as Matt says, timing is better and all that stuff. But is he mechanically making the changes that maybe, and again, we don't know necessarily what mechanical changes they wanted him to make, but is he making those sufficiently? And, you know, unfortunately, guys, we're really not going to know, and we're not even going to get the full picture, but we're going to know a lot more, you know, in a few weeks after the Packers game. That's where we're going to get a better sense of all of this. As far as, like, the training camp stuff goes, you know, I've been saying it all along, and I probably said it to you guys, he needs to be better. Like, he should be better at this point in his career in camp. But I also am not setting off any panic alarms because I don't know what is going into some of these plays, and I don't know what the coaches are necessarily looking for when they're watching him throw.
What does it say about how the Bears feel about Elliott Fry and Eddie Pinheiro that, according to reports, they were in on Kari Vedvik and they just weren't able to offer enough? What does that failed pursuit say about how they actually feel about this current kicking derby?
Well, they obviously haven't picked the guy yet out of these two. And Ryan Pace is standing by what he said. I mean, give him credit. He said he's going to explore every single avenue. And that's part of it. Now, I wonder if they actually had come up with a deal that made sense for them. Obviously, the Bears, it seemed like, were thinking more along the lines of a conditional pick. I wonder if they would have brought him in, cut one of them, and either Fry or Pinheiro, and still had a kicking competition
right
up till September. But I would have been surprised if they just made that trade and brought him in and said, hey, here's our kicker. He's never kicked in a regular season game before, but we're all set. So that would have surprised me. I think it is just kind of they are legitimately exploring all these avenues, and that's part of it. And it would have just been kind of an updated competition, if you will, between Vedvik and then either Fry or Pinheiro, whoever would have stuck around.
I guess that's part of the question nobody's really asked out loud, or at least not on this show, is what level of kicker would the Bears have to bring in to stop some or any kind of competition? Like, Kari Vedvik might not be, like you say, he hasn't kicked in a regular season game. Does it take a guy who's kicked for 2 years, for 5 years? Like, at what point, do you have any sense at what point they'd stop the competition?
Yeah, you know, so many people have asked about guys like Matt Bryant and Kai Forbath.
Yeah,
I think the Bears have made it abundantly clear they have no interest in a guy who's kicked before. Like, they want somebody who is unproven, who is cheap. You know, they want to find their own Justin Tucker or Will Lutz. Like, that's their goal. Now, what maybe waiver claim Sunday, they just have a panic and they say, you know what, we're done with this. We can't let an unproven guy handle this. Let's go bring in Kai Forbath. So let's go get Dan Bailey. If the Vikings cut, you know, maybe they just panic and they totally change their tune. But everything we've seen from this team since January, when they had their first kicker tryouts, is they want to go this undrafted rookie route. And I'll ask you guys the question that I've been kind of thinking about. Nobody understands the gravity of being the Bears kicker for Week One better than Pinheiro or Fry, because they've been here for so long. They've dealt with us for all these weeks. They heard the crowds at Soldier Field. They know this situation better than everybody in the world. I wonder if that helps either one of them.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, that could be a negative.
That's what I was thinking too, Dan. I wonder if there's a benefit from a mental perspective of bringing a guy in on Sunday and saying, hey, you just have to meet the media once. They're not going to be able to watch the full practice, so they're not going to be able to see you kick. You'll just kick in front of us, and then you'll go do your job on Thursday night against the Packers like it's no big deal. I kind of wonder if that's something that they can consider, if that's the route they decide to go, if that's a benefit to bring in someone cold who just has, every kicker in the world knows what's going on here. But these two, they're going to understand that pressure so much more. I mean, there's going to be a tension in Soldier Field that night, the first time there's a field goal, unlike anything we've probably seen before with this team. Even through the Cody Parkey stuff, there was every week you kind of felt it. But that week one, it's going to be really eerie. And those two guys know what's coming, and I wonder if there's a benefit to bringing a guy who just has no clue and has been away from it.
See, I'm kind of with you there, and I'm okay with them making a change, whether it's Waiver Sunday or whatever veteran kicker it is, because that will have meant that they admitted they were wrong about their kicking situation, and whether it's just vindictive of me or not, I need them to be able to admit that they were wrong about the way they evaluated the kicker spot, because they didn't do it for 6 weeks last season, and it cost them a run at the Super Bowl. So doing that would make me feel better about the organization admitting when they know they got it wrong.
Yeah, and the funniest part about all of this, Connor, is no matter who they – I don't think there's a single kicker that they could bring in who's available right now that would make anybody feel comfortable about that first game. I mean, you can't – let's say if Elliott Fry makes every kick the rest of practice and in all the preseason games, there's no way anyone's going to feel that confident he's going to nail his first kick at Soldier Field against the Packers. Like, you just – nobody knows. I mean, that's just the way that this position is. There's so few guys you can really rely on year to year. And yeah, that makes you, and when you think about it that way, it makes you almost more frustrated that they handled the kicking situation the way that they held on to Connor Barth probably longer than they should have a couple of years ago. So, instead of kind of just, I wonder if Ryan Pace says, you know what, if a guy comes in and misses a kick, I'm just going to cut him and bring in somebody else. And then maybe they'll have eight kickers this year and just put it out there to these guys and say, hey, if you miss a kick and we believe it's your fault and a kick you should have made, you're done. I don't think they would ever do that, but I wonder if that's the type of pressure that can maybe help them out as they try to figure out the best way to go about this year. I will say it is interesting, and I wonder if the Parkey kind of aftermath has affected some of these other teams. You saw what Minnesota did. You see what's going on in Green Bay and Cleveland and Tampa Bay having these kicking situations. I wonder if other teams are getting nervous because they all see what's happening here, and they're feeling similarly about this their own kicking situation. So at least the Bears aren't totally alone in this.
Kevin Fishbane, thank you as always. We appreciate it.
All right, take care, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.